Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the lithium markets and looking at a number of projects around the world, really drilling into the dynamics of the market as well. And to do that, we're kindly joined by the CEO of Cadence Minerals, Kieran Morzaria. Kieran, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure, as always, Jonathan.
So, regular listeners to the podcast will be familiar with Cadence Minerals. You presented at the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Minerals conference back in February, where the focus is very much on the Amapa iron ore mine, which, you know, everyone will understand is your flagship project. We will touch on that later on in the podcast. But today, Kieran, what we're going to be focusing on is lithium. You've got a number of lithium assets, which we will discuss as we get into the podcast. But to start with, we're going to be looking at, you know, the overall lithium market, the dynamics of the market initially. But before we do that, for those people that aren't familiar with Cadence Minerals, would you be able to give us a quick breakdown of who you are and where you're operating, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So Cadence Minerals is a investment company listed on AIM. We invest in the metals that we see and minerals that we see are critical for the future of the electrification of vehicles in particular. And so that covers everything from, in our case, the portfolio covers both lithium, rare earth and iron ore, because iron is used in the manufacture of vehicles as well. So we invest across those assets. We take both private equity stakes in the sense that we take an active involvement in the management of those assets, as well as we take passive stakes in publicly listed stocks, and particularly that's the case for lithium assets that we've been investing in recently.
Fantastic. So now, Kieran, you know, looking at, you know, the potential metals to invest in when you're looking at the EV market, there's, of course, you know, four or five key ones. But, you know, looking at the portfolio of Cadence, there seems to be, very much a focus on lithium. You know, personally, for you, Kieran, where does that focus come from? You know, why not cobalt or graphite, for example? What's the particular attraction of lithium?
Well, in pretty simple terms, for electric vehicles, for clarity on electric vehicles, there is really no substitute, or there is no current substitute that has gone down the sort of Moore's law of cost per kilowatt hour to replace it. So whatever battery chemistry that we end up with, whether it's a low nickel, high nickel, zero cobalt, lithium fluoride phosphate, these different types of batteries technologies, which I believe there will be a mix, lithium is always going to form part of that. And so therefore, we really believe in that lithium as the primary battery metal or compound, that it's sold as. And, you know, for us, we've been investing in these assets since 2013. So we saw an advantage of us of getting educated in this space, understanding processing, understanding where there were strategic advantages with the companies we invested in. And that's where our stakes remain, in assets that we believe have strategic advantages on the cost curve. And, you know, lithium is part of our DNA, as it were, and where we have invested. And we will continue to look at assets if they are priced right and have strategic advantages.
Fantastic, thank you. So anybody following the lithium market, Kieran, will be aware that around sort of 2025 is a key day, because that's the point that forecasts have demands outstripping current supply. And, you know, of course, you know, we're looking at lithium prices and, you know, how they've reacted to that, and that's something that we'll touch on a bit later. But, you know, that date there around 2025, of course, there's, you know, there's a scramble to get lithium online. I mean, do you feel that, you know, with the activity that's going on, obviously you're on the ground and you've got a good knowledge of what's happening out there, not only at Cadence, but other companies. I mean, do you think, you know, looking at those projections of demand for lithium going past 2025, is there any chance that we're going to get enough production online to meet that demand?
I personally think, you know, we're already partly in a deficit, and that's, you know, there's no really futures position in lithium, if you want to call that. There is no futures, there's no hedging. So the lithium pricing that is being quoted are based on, you know, physical contracts that are coming at the moment. So on the basis that that has accelerated quite dramatically, when we look at the lithium pricing from, you know, June 2018 was where it's, well, basically March 20 was where it hit its low point. And then subsequent to January 21, when it was sitting around, you know, $10,000 a ton for lithium carbonate, lithium hydroxide, or thereabouts, hydroxide was always being higher, carbonate sitting at 45,000. You know, that move only can mean that there is limited supply, and therefore there is an increase in price, and that's reflecting in electric vehicles. I think Tesla is looking to increase its electric vehicle cost to the retail market by about 5%, but that's reflecting about a 20% increase in its battery cost, driven by not only lithium but other assets like nickel and cobalt. So what I would say is that shortfall is already coming, or is already partly there. I think the biggest problem that people have failed to do, or the market has failed to do and understand, is, you know, a mining asset doesn't suddenly appear. It's not an on and off button. And yes, there are assets that have developed quite substantially in this period. But, you know, if you're going from a greenfield to a fully producing asset, that can take 10 years. And, you know, 2025, you know, just do the maths, is less than 10 years away. So there is going to be a shortage. And what will probably happen is that will slow the penetration of electric vehicles, not because there's a lack of demand. There is already, you know, it is arguably at this point in time, even at the more expensive, you know, the electric vehicles, have reached purchase parity to a diesel and fuel driven engine, or diesel or petrol driven engine. So the shortfall will occur 2025. There will be shortfall. I think my personal view is that the lithium pricing will be still strong. All these elements will be still strong because these assets won't have come online. But we won't. I think car manufacturers, OEMs have, you know, failed to really invest in those assets, and therefore they're going to find a shortfall in being able to deliver a sort of 100% of their sales in electric vehicles. So there is a shortfall. How long that will continue will really depend on the investment that goes into new assets. I just want to give you like a really quick understanding. Look, if we say around 25% or 30% of new vehicles being wholly electric, there will still be a shortfall. To hit 100%, you have to realize that you have to be, you know, there's 15 million vehicles a year sold in Europe overall, you know, small vehicles, not including trucks and stuff like that. You know, that would require basically 30 European metal holdings size productions coming online by 2025. There are no, in Europe alone, there are nowhere near that. And that would require in the order of $20 to $25 billion worth of investment to achieve that, because if you were to produce a mine and the processing plant to deliver that. So, and that isn't occurring. It's occurring in battery manufacturer, but it's not occurring at the mine and exploration and development level. So yes, there will be a shortfall, and there will continue to be a shortfall for the foreseeable future. Whether it rectifies itself in 2030, I think people are suggesting it will do. I certainly thought that in May 2018, we'd be hopefully looking that investment would occur and we wouldn't have this problem. But again, projects have been deferred, projects have been delayed, and has resulted in the shortfall.
So, you know, there's that 5-year period there, Kieran, between 2025 and 2030. You mentioned there where there's going to be a severe deficit of of lithium. I mean, what's the risk to lithium that, you know, manufacturers start to look for an alternative? Is there a viable alternative? Because 5 years is a long time. And you're only moving electric and you have to move into cleaner forms of fuel in transport. You know, does that, you know, that deficit there mean that, you know, manufacturers start to look for an alternative that then could, you know, damage the long-term trajectory of lithium? Or is it the case that there simply isn't an alternative and we're just going to have to deal with that deficit until we get the production online?
So there are two points to this. And if we look at, I'll tackle it in two ways. The first way is the incumbent investment that's occurred and the drop in the battery tech, dropping the cost per kilowatt hour. So the cost per kilowatt hour is a measure by which, you know, it costs to put a battery into, including all the processing, all the mining processing costs into your electric vehicle. You know, electric vehicles about 35 to 40, 75 kilowatt hours. That's how they measure the size of, is effectively the size of the tank. So about 10 years ago, it was around $1,000 a kilowatt hour. In those 10 years, through the massive amount of capital investment that has occurred in lithium ion battery technology, it has dropped to, just before these increases in lithium prices, it's dropped to about $100 a kilowatt hour, and it's probably about $120 a kilowatt hour. So it's almost a tenfold decrease in the cost of producing the biggest cost in an electric vehicle. So that has resulted, of course, in a drop in the retail prices of electric vehicles. And, you know, it's hard to imitate that over, you know, 5 years. In addition to that, lithium ion batteries, you know, the first one came out in 19, you know, was actually used on the moon rover, the landing of the moon rover in the 70s. And, you know, it's taken that time to get it, you know, perfected in terms of its chemistry, in terms of its efficiency. So I think it's going to be very hard in 5 years to imitate all that work, make sure it's a safe ion battery to be utilized in electric vehicles, and to get the cost down. So, you know, there we go. Let's deal with that one point. The second point is actually in the element, lithium ion. Lithium is got the highest energy density of any element on the periodic table. So lithium utilized for electric vehicles, I'm not saying that we could use different forms of electrical storage for green energy, you know, on a terrestrial basis, like on a piece of land. You can use sodium ion, you can use different types of batteries there because weight and size is not a problem. You know, for electric vehicles and for, you know, lithium ion is really the only current cost-efficient solution. So both on a cost basis because the capital invested, also where it sits on, pardon me, on the elemental table makes it very hard to replace. And lastly, if we look at the capital that's been invested in all the battery plants, pardon me, swallowed a frog. you know, and all the battery plants in Europe, Northvolt's got 60 gigawatt hours, Freyr's got 32 gigawatt hours, Cattel's done another 85 gigawatt hours. You know, there are huge amounts of investment that is going to occur in Europe in producing these battery plants. No one's going to suddenly write this off for a different technology. So there's so much capital with the train has moved out of the station and it's going headlong for lithium ion battery technology and electric vehicles. And whether it be the capital that's being committed for new battery plants, the clear elemental advantage that lithium has, and the cost per kilowatt hour that lithium ion batteries had. If you take all those three, it is very hard to replace it, even with a better technology, in 5 years. We only have to look at Betamax and VHS. You know, Betamax was far better technology in the end. But the vested interest and the amount of capital invested in VHS and the content on VHS made it, you know, it just overtook Betamax. And there are plenty of other examples like that. Although I think lithium ion technology is the best technology for electrification of vehicles at this point in time. So I don't think there's going to be a replacement in 5 years, and very simple. We're going to have a shortfall. Therefore, what will happen is that the penetration rate will slow. It's not going to be this J curve to 100% in 5 years, it's going to be a bit of a J curve and then more of an S curve. So it slows down as we bring in new production, and then it will eventually get to, you know, whatever it is, 80%, 70% penetration in electric vehicles over the longer term.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Kieran, let's now talk to the prices that that we see out there in the market. As I said at the beginning, we're looking at, you know, levels on the LME for lithium hydroxide above $80,000 per ton. That's up sharply over the last month. You know, and that obviously speaks to what you've just said there, that there is no alternative for the EV revolution. It's going to have to be lithium. But, you know, in your view, looking at the price in the market out there, are things, you know, are they getting ahead of themselves, or is this a real reflection that, you know, yes, in 2025, we're going to have a big deficit and we could actually see lithium prices go higher from here?
Yeah, so I think, you know, two things to be very aware here. You know, lithium compounds are not a fungible, tradable commodity. You know, each manufacturer of batteries will want a different special mix of lithium carbonate, lithium hydroxide. So these are not futures. You can't sit there and say, oh, I'm going to buy a parload of lithium hydroxide and keep one. You can't do that with hydroxide. It depletes over a period of time. And I'm going to let it sit in a warehouse, and then I'm going to sell it on the basis, I think, in a year or even 5 months, because I think the price is going up. One, the producer of the lithium hydroxide will never provide a guarantee to the eventual seller. It has to go, it is directly, this is not a traditional, you know, tin or copper or even iron ore where you can, it goes through intermediaries. It literally goes from the mine on a contract basis to the end user, i.e. the battery manufacturer or the in the case of Australian assets, to the roaster, who then turns it into lithium hydroxide carbonate, who then sells it onto the battery manufacturer. So these prices aren't speculative prices. There isn't a speculative market. These are actual contractual prices that are being exchanged at the moment. So it's not a reflection of a future, it's a reflection of right today, right now. Do I think that this will continue to rise, will continue to move at a much, much higher prices? As I said, I think there is, as demand, as we get more supply and there's huge incentivization to get supply on, it does take time. The prices will soften. But, you know, as far as Cadence is concerned and its investments, all of its investments have effectively utilized substantially lower, I think about $11,000 to $17,000 per ton in its NPV calculations of the assessment of these assets. So where it will settle, will it be 20, 25? Who knows at this point in time, because it is an extraordinary time in this market. But I certainly think these peak, you know, I've actually got it probably closer to $50,000 a ton in using benchmark minerals pricing and not the 60, 70. And I think those prices will retain or may go higher in the short term, but eventually they'll come off as some more assets come online in the next 2 to 3 years.
Fantastic. So, Kieran, you mentioned there are obviously different forms of lithium and different requirements of manufacturers. You know, and not all manufacturer is looking for the same form of lithium and, you know, in the same mix. So, I mean, that leads on to the question now about sort of looking at global production of lithium. And I just want to speak now about, you know, how that varies, because, of course, you know, you mentioned their European Metals Holdings, that, you know, that's an asset here in Europe. But from my understanding, there's a big difference between exploring and obviously mining for lithium here in Europe compared to Australia, for example. I mean, how is that impacting the market at the moment? You know, is there a sweet spot, you know, maybe a geography for lithium at the moment? Or are we sort of looking at, you know, different markets developing at different times and obviously different geological makeups impacting the prices? And maybe, you know, this is obviously sort of going into the manufacturing side of things, you know, are we seeing different requirements in terms of you know, what we want in geographies for the manufacturer. I mean, for example, you know, in America, is there a different requirement than maybe there is in Europe for that the manufacturer of lithium and lithium batteries?
So I think let's start from right at, you know, the production side of the raw material. Really, at the moment, there are two major producers of lithium products. You know, let's not talk about the final carbonite or hydroxide in the world. They are the salars of Chile. So these are areas in which we've had, salars are dried out player lakes in which there has been enrichment through geological processes of various salts, and lithium salts have been one of those. And that has, been a traditional source of lithium carbonate. And there is both a technical grade lithium carbonate and a battery grade, technical grade around 99%, which is a whole other market. You know, that's used in everything from, glass, particularly glass and other bits and pieces like that. And that's, you know, a market on its own. And that price has also increased. So, and there are main players in there that are these places like companies like Albemarle, SQM, who really deal with those assets. Then predominantly, and that occurred in sort of 2017, 2016, where we had this explosion, actually 2015, this explosion of what we'll call hard rock deposits. Now, these hard rock deposits are pegmatites, and these have been enriched through fluids, and you know, you often get tin and tantalum associated with them, and lithium in I'm a geologist background, so with these granitoid environments. And these pegmatites in Australia are predominantly mined. They're concentrated or beneficated up to, let's call it, a 6% ore of lithium oxide. That's then sent to China and then processed in a process of effectively heating it up and sulfur and a sulfuric acid roast. And then that produces through several other processing stages, a lithium carbonate or lithium hydroxide product that then can utilize in battery products. So in Australia, they basically tend at this point in time, a bit like they do with iron ore, produce the iron ore, ship it to China. China delivers, you know, steel in this case, delivers lithium carbonate, lithium hydroxide. In Chile, they're able to produce, because of the nature of the deposit, a lithium carbonate or hydroxide concentrate already, and it might need to be improved to take it to battery grade through further processing. So those are the really two sort of big sources. And there's been a scramble around the world of finding either similar salars, different ways of extracting it, gone down some, let's call it, less traditional lines. European Metal Holdings is one of them, where that is actually previously a tin deposit. It's a very large granite intrusion with tin, but it's a hard rock. It's not a pegmatite. It's just a granitoid, massive granitoid disseminated lithium and tin project, which is, you know, multi-generational, one of the largest lithium deposits in Europe. And that also but that's not going to send its concentrate to China. It is going to, in Europe, produce a lithium hydroxide and lithium carbonate. And I think there is a need or a twist in geopolitics where they want both the mining to occur in the continent, like in Europe, if they can, if they have enough resources, and to produce the final product, the lithium carbonate, and to take that lithium carbonate and take it to a battery within Europe. So the supply chain is within that continent. That's the same in America. That's certainly the case. They're looking to do that. And they do have pegmatites and other, but they're looking to basically keep that within the whole supply chain within the continent. And our two investments, or two large investments that we have, we've bought that supply chain from effectively the mining of it to producing the lithium carbonate. And that's in our holdings in European Metal Holdings and our joint venture with Ganfeng Lithium in the Sonora Lithium project in Mexico. So it's a complex story, but in essence, what we're going to see is these two traditional players will still be there. Australia producing pegmatite concentrate, shifting it off to China for processing, and China and Korea is where the battery manufacture has traditionally occurred, and that's where a lot of the gigafactories are occurring. But that will now move more Europe-centric and more US-centric. I would say the European Battery Alliance has done amazing for works for that, and they have really pushed building battery capacity in terms of battery manufacturing plants in Europe, and therefore they're now also looking to source the material if they can within Europe, so the lithium carbonate and therefore the mining in Europe. Unfortunately, Europe doesn't have, 30 EMHs lying around in terms of the type of, resources that they need for 100% electrification. But, they can then source them from elsewhere in the world as well, maybe even buying the product from Australia. That's also a possibility. So I think it will be more local, Africa, Brazil. That's where they'll look at because the shipping distances are shorter. But, those are basically, we've got these two incumbent countries and now more localization of, you can see in Europe, you can see in America, of the market trying to shift to basically have a value chain within respective continents rather than having to ship it all around the world.
That's very interesting, Kieran. Thank you. So now let's have a look at the Cadence portfolio. You did allude there that you have two assets. The partnership there with Ganfeng and European Metals. Would you have to give listeners a little bit more detail to those and where they sort of fit into the global picture of the lithium market?
Yeah, so European Metals Holdings, we have an 8.2% stake in that. They're a listed entity, and we have a public equity stake in that, not at the joint venture. They, we invested that early days when it was a pre-resource. We knew it was a tin asset. It floated as well as a tin and a lithium asset. It's got a net present value of 1.94 billion. The annual production is about 29,000 tons of lithium hydroxide. That's what they're looking to target at the PFS level. That is probably equivalent to around 500,000 cars a year, if you want to put that in concept. And it's got a JORC resource of 7.4 million tons of LCE. So, the PFS highlights only goes for 21 year mine life. It could be a 70 year mine life if they were to convert more of those resources into reserves. The capital costs, around $800 million to develop this, and that's both the mine and processing plant. Sometimes people compare the Australian assets to this, and they make a very wrong comparison because the Australian assets is only doing effectively the mine and beneficiation, getting it a half of the way to the lithium hydroxide. It then has to go to China to be converted to lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate. So if you this value chain is, as I said, the integrated all the way from the mine to producing the final product, that has the advantage that you're not paying third parties. And therefore our operating cost, including the credits, around $3,400 a ton per ton of lithium hydroxide. And we talked about, prices of $40,000 a ton per ton of lithium hydroxide at the moment. So it's less than tenth of the cost. The NPV was based on $17,000 a ton. So it is a big deposit, multi-generational, a large enough production at 29,000 tons of lithium hydroxide a year. And it's in the Czech Republic, which is really key when we look at, gigawatt hours that are going to be installed in Europe as a whole. This sort of would service about a 25 gigawatt hour sort of a battery, a manufacturing plant. And if I look at the list here, that's barely than less than a tenth of that's required by what where manufacturers are looking to produce their battery plants. So it is a significant, large project. It's in a secure environment. It's already fully funded to the investment decision by its JV partner, Chess, which own 51% of the asset. So that's going really well. And we certainly look forward to seeing the bankable feasibility completed and then financing and construction. We also have the Sonora Lithium project, which is, again, very large, 35,000 tons per annum of lithium carbonate, about 500,000, that's about enough for 500,000 vehicles of lithium carbonate. The capital costs of $728 million, operating costs of $3,000 per ton, again, of lithium carbonate, about against a backdrop of $40,000 per ton of sales. The lithium carbonate prices that they utilized in their net present value was $11,000, and that had an NPV of $800 million. Similar size, similar mine life. In this, we don't have to the European Metals Holding project. In this, we don't have an equity stake. We have a joint venture on one of the areas, which only gets mined in years 8 to 19. So it's much later in the mine life. And you know, we're seeing what Ganfeng are going to do with this asset, whether they want to expand it or increase production to a much quicker, which would bring that mine life earlier. But you know, that we're in very much Ganfeng's hands here on how they look to develop that Sonora Lithium project. So those are our two primary ones that we hold. And I think one thing that, you know, we recently did was that we had this very early exploration project in Australia, Northern Australia, a pegmatite target, which is this rock that hosts lithium minerals. And with the idea that, you know, from Australia, these often get converted into a lithium concentrate, a 6% lithium oxide concentrate that gets shipped off to China to produce a final product. We got involved with this about 3 or 4 years ago. It was part of our strategy to get more management, you know, get more active in private assets. We've taken 31% of this asset, but we've agreed to sell it to a third party, where effectively we get cash and equity in the new company and performance, but performance payments based on their success in drilling this out and delivering, you know, a 12 million ton asset at a, you know, 12 million ton asset in terms of resources of lithium oxide. I think there's a high probability they'll be able to achieve some of those targets, partly because of its where it is. It's right next to this asset owned by Core Lithium, which has got, I think, off the top of my head, around 17 million tons at 1.2% lithium oxide. So that's a massive deposit, and it's Core Lithium's capitalized at around $1 billion at the moment, or there or thereabouts, Australian. So we've both, in that case, because we wanted to take the risk, we didn't want to put much capital into there. We've let someone else take the risk who are going to invest $4 million. They're committed to invest $4 million to prove up a resource over the next 3 years. We've got our cash back from our original investment, and we're exposed to the upside in the equity in the new company, which intends to be listed on the Australian Stock Exchange. We still have to complete that transaction. We've entered into binding terms, and once the DD is completed and regulatory approvals, we will announce the completion. Yeah, so those are our three lithium assets, as it were.
So, Kieran, people were interested to know, because, you know, obviously you're looking there at a sale of an asset. Is this, you know, the proceeds from that, is there a possibility that you look for another lithium asset, or are you happy with the two that you've got there at the moment?
At the moment, we're quite happy with the two that we have. I think with this lithium pricing environment, as I said, there's some uncertainty of how long this is going to stay at that level. Is it going to go further north? And I think we're a bit nervous about some of the pricing of projects. So in terms, they might be slightly overvalued. And really, for us to deliver shareholder value, we have to find projects that are cheap, which are harder and harder to come by. Or in such a distressed situation, like with a MAPA, where we have to resolve effectively a judicial restructuring, that we can unlock value by sorting that out when there is a fundamental good asset behind it. And those are hard to come by. And if they're cheap, they're sometimes in locations that we don't necessarily want to invest because of the political and country risk. So at the moment, you know, we got our money back, and it wasn't a huge amount in terms of what we had invested. We'd only invested £600,000 in this case. So we got that. The rest is upside. So actually, by doing this transaction, we haven't sold our asset. We've sold part, we've the asset's been sold into, reversed into new company, in which we've got a cash consideration, and we've got exposure to that company's success. So hopefully, assuming it completes, we'll have actually exposure to three lithium assets through our equity stake in the new company that has bought or is in the process of buying Synergy Prospecting.
Fascinating, fascinating. Kieran, thank you very much. So just to finish off now, understand that you're not long back from Brazil and your Mapa iron ore project, of course, your flagship project. Is there any updates that you can give us here on, you know, what's been happening there and what investors can be looking forward to from a Mapa?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you rightly pointed out, I was out there last week, mainly to deal with the pre-feasibility study. That's one of our key goals, to get that delivered as quick as possible. I'm happy to say that it's progressing on time and on budget. So we certainly expect that during early second half of this year, so July time, during July, we should be able to publish a PFS, a pre-feasibility study on the asset. And that has, you know, and it's progressing well. The team are executing, of course, the continued rehabilitation, liaising with the license, you know, in relation to licenses, getting those licenses reinstated with SEMA, which is the state environmental authority. So that's progressing well on the bi-weekly meetings that we have with them. And, you know, the advantage of this asset, of course, is because it already has that infrastructure, the capital cost to redevelop it is not going to be as expensive as a new asset. A new asset of this size, from rail, port, and the mine, would probably cost about $1.5 to $2 billion to construct from anew. And we're going to be nowhere near those figures. The PFS will highlight what those should be, but it'll be a fraction of that cost. And you know, we still have responsibilities like dam maintenance, plant maintenance, security. So all of that is ongoing and is progressing really well. In addition, we've just started shipping material again from our stockpiles, or dev stockpiles. There's about 1.25 million tons of stockpiles there, which we, you know, if the economic environment stays the same, dev will continue to ship generate revenue from that to pay the secured bank creditors. As for targets on that asset, I think I've got very clear targets. The first is completion of the pre-feasibility study. The second for us is this asset's got about 15-year mine life. We want to try and extend that. And how do we do that? There's been historic joint venture operating agreements between Dev Mineração and Tucano, which is a proximal gold mine, with the right to take out the iron ore from there. So we're going to see if one, we reestablish those joint ventures, and two, see if we can determine a resource around that area. And that hopefully increase the mine life for 5 to 10 years. That's a hope rather than a definitive. And so those two targets on an operational basis, and define, I think we have a first right of refusal to go to 49% on this asset, and we want to define how much that will cost us by negotiating that with Indosino, our JV partners. So those are the three targets that we certainly would look to try and achieve in the coming year as big targets. There will be, of course, updates on progress of various other things, but those are the three big ones we'll want to define this year.
Thank you, Kieran. A truly fascinating discussion there. And anybody listening to the podcast and wants to know a little bit more about Cadence Minerals, there will be a link through to their website in the notes. So do follow that and have a look, and you'll be able to explore a little bit more about the projects there that Kieran kindly outlined. So Kieran, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
So just as a final note here to listeners, as we mentioned at the beginning, Kieran did present at the Metals and Mining Conference back in February, which is accessible through the UK Investor Magazine video section on our website. So do check that out again for some more details and background to Cadence Minerals. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.